It's Thursday, June 11th, 2009, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Good day, Stashers, and welcome to the podcast. I was up bright and early this morning for two breaking news stories that we'll be covering today in our hemp headlines, but it did give me the opportunity to see the power of Twitter in action. You've probably heard about Twitter, this little micro-blogging, social networking, text messaging tool that all the kids are raving about. You've probably even seen it on the news networks. CNN's got a feed, New York Times has a feed, even congressmen and senators are tweeting. So what's this all about? Well, it's pretty simple. It's just a text message, really, but it's the type that you can subscribe to. You can get it on your cell phone or on the internet, and it gives you the ability to spread information very rapidly across the country through your network of friends. Think of the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon game. You know that one where everybody's connected by just 6 or fewer connections all across the planet? Well, Twitter works like that, too. Today, Charles Lynch was set to be sentenced at 10 Pacific. By about 11:43, the LA Times posted the first story that I could find on the sentencing. By 11:55, I tweeted the story out to my 340 followers. 7 of my followers then took that message and retweeted it to all of their followers, and within the span of about a half hour, we had that news and links to the Daily Audio Stash out to about 6,000 people coast to coast. And again, people that may not have been near their computer because they may have gotten the message on their cell phone text messaging. Other texters were out there too, like Ngayo420 or Ngayo Belem for West Coast Cannabis, Celeb Stoner Steve Bloom, our own Joplin Normal out of Joplin, Missouri was also tweeting the news, and of course their followers were retweeting and spreading the information. Now sure, lots of people use Twitter for stupid things like what they're eating for lunch or what song they're playing, but this can be a really effective tool for activists and organizers. Think about it. Imagine that there's a dispensary raid taking place and you need to get people to the scene with cameras and signs for a protest. Your tweet can go out to all your followers who can spread it to their followers, and within a half hour, you could have hundreds or even thousands of people right there on the streets. If you're an activist and you're giving a speech at a hemp fest or a rally, or you're seeing a speech at a hemp fest or a rally that you think someone else should follow, you can tweet that out and people can catch it on their cell phones and join you there. There's so many things you can do with this, and if you'd like more information about it, just send me an email here at stash@normal.org. Don't be intimidated by all these silly terms like Twitter and tweet. I can explain it to you all in regular human language. Also, want to point out that the activist agenda calendar is going to undergo some reconstruction. We're going to include the normal calendars from other normal chapters rather than having to have them send me the information and then me have to retype it back in. So expect some changes in that Google calendar. Now, coming up on today's Daily Audio Stash, we've got your hemp headlines, including the breaking news of Charles Lynch, the first medical marijuana dispensary owner to be sentenced under the Obama administration following Eric Holder's new policy. We're going to take a look at Barney Frank, who has just introduced the new Medical Marijuana Patient Protection Act of 2009 with many co-sponsors. Richard Lee of Oaksterdam University has launched the Tax Cannabis 2010 initiative in California to bring legalization directly to the voters. And we get a terrible story out of London where it seems some UK police officers are suspected of waterboarding suspects in a cannabis case. Yes, waterboarding. In our Daily Toker Tunes brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com, we've got the best blues song from the Global Marijuana Music Awards, Walter Hurlman with Toke of Rhythm. And for our interview segment, once again, we're bringing you special audio from the Aspen Legal Seminar this last weekend. This one features Oakland attorney Bill Panzer, the co-author of Prop 215 and a member of the Normal Board of Directors, with his take on the so-called new policy from Eric Holder and the Obama administration regarding dispensaries, some of the law regarding dispensaries, and a look at cross-examining so-called police experts on cannabis on the witness stand. It's a pretty funny presentation, and I'm sure you'll enjoy it. We're gaining momentum here in the fight to end adult marijuana prohibition. They're going to be talking about it all next week on the Anderson Cooper 360 show on CNN, so check that out at 10 p.m. Eastern. But now, it's time for your Normal Daily Audio Stash.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our Normal Daily Audio Stash, Hemp Headlines. Charles Lynch sentenced to 366 days in prison for growing legal medical marijuana in California. From the Los Angeles Times. The owner of a Morro Bay pot dispensary, who emerged as a key figure in the national debate over medical marijuana, was sentenced to 1 year and 1 day in prison today by a federal judge in Los Angeles. Charles Lynch, age 47, dressed in a dark suit, sat with his hands clasped and stared straight ahead as the sentence was imposed by U.S. District Court Judge George H. Wu. Lynch declined the opportunity to address the court moments earlier. His mother, seated in the courtroom gallery nearby, fought back tears as Wu said he saw no way around imposing a sentence of at least 1 year. Lynch's case made headlines nationwide and came to symbolize the tension between conflicting state and federal marijuana laws. Cultivating, using, and selling doctor-recommended marijuana is allowed under some circumstances in California and about a dozen other states, but such activities are banned entirely under federal law. Lynch was prosecuted for illegally distributing marijuana from his Central Coast Compassionate Caregivers facility, despite having the blessing of Morro Bay's mayor, city attorney, and other civic leaders. Judge Wu seems like he didn't want to sentence Lynch, but his hands were tied by Joe Biden's mandatory minimum sentencing laws. From Reason.com. Reason.tv's Ted Balliker, on the scene at the Lynch sentencing, reports that Charlie Lynch has been sentenced to 3 1-year sentences that will run concurrently, plus 1 day in jail. Lynch is free pending appeal, and his lawyers, say Balliker, seem extremely happy and relieved with the sentence and are convinced they will knock it down much lower and that Lynch will not be in prison anytime soon. What a travesty of justice. Charles Lynch couldn't have been more California law-abiding. He had the blessing of his city council. He was scrupulously following state medical marijuana laws. The feds, of course, won't allow you to mention those facts at federal trial because there is no such thing as medical marijuana dispensaries under federal laws, only drug dealers. Then they try to paint Lynch as some sort of kingpin because he carried a lot of cash, which isn't surprising. Who wants to create a paper trail of check stubs or credit card receipts when buying cannabis at the federally illegal dispensary? They also tried to paint Lynch as some sort of predator because he helped patients under the age of 18 who happened to have severe medical conditions, a doctor's recommendation, and their parents' blessing, and, in fact, could not even enter the dispensary without their parents. Finally, they tried to tar the whole medical marijuana movement by saying Lynch was serving people who weren't visibly sick. And just what does an HIV-positive person look like? Or someone with irritable bowel? Or a migraine sufferer? Or someone with asthma or epilepsy? Can you spot them by looks alone? President Obama, this isn't funny anymore. Good people like Charles Lynch and Eddie Lepp will be incarcerated, while the greedy thieves who wrecked Wall Street will enjoy their taxpayer-funded bonuses. Providers of medicine to the truly sick will languish in prison cells, while the ministers of torture from the previous administration will go on six-figure speaking tours. Citizens scrupulously obeying state law and paying taxes will be jailed by the feds, while our states desperately seek ways to raise revenue and cut costs. This is insanity. Free Charles Lynch and free Eddie Lepp. Representative Barney Frank introduces Medical Marijuana Patient Protection Act of 2009. Massachusetts Democrat Barney Frank, along with a bipartisan coalition of co-sponsors, will introduce legislation in Congress today to strengthen legal protections for state-authorized medical marijuana patients. The bill, entitled the Medical Marijuana Patient Protection Act of 2009, seeks to amend the discrepancy between federal law and the laws of over a dozen states that have enacted regulations governing the therapeutic use of cannabis. 13 states, Alaska, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Maine, Michigan, Montana, New Mexico, Nevada, Oregon, Rhode Island, Vermont, and Washington, have enacted laws prohibiting medical marijuana patients from state prosecution. Passage of the Medical Marijuana Patient Protection Act would ensure that medical cannabis patients who are compliant with the state law would no longer have to fear arrest or prosecution from federal law enforcement agencies. Previous versions of the Medical Marijuana Patient Protection Act were introduced in both the 108th and 109th Congress, but failed to receive a public hearing or a committee vote. While campaigning for the presidency, Barack Obama promised not to use Justice Department resources, quote, to try and circumvent state medical marijuana laws, end quote. A pledge that has been repeated in recent months by U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder. Nevertheless, agents from the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration have continued to target medical marijuana providers in states that allow for the drug's use. To support the Medical Marijuana Patient Protection Act of 2009, please log on to Normal's Take Action Center at norml.org. Oaksterdam's Richard Lee backs TaxCannabis2010.org to legalize marijuana by initiative. From the San Francisco Chronicle. With polls showing the legalization of marijuana gaining public support and a state budget crisis fueling an ever more desperate search for revenue, backers of the first major statewide initiative to legalize marijuana for personal use and allow counties to tax and regulate the drug say they're preparing to get the matter on the November 2010 ballot. Quote, we think the tides have turned, end quote, said Richard Lee, the executive director of Oaksterdam University, a major medical marijuana dispensary and advocacy group in Oakland, and a founder of TaxCannabis2010.org, sponsor of the initiative. He said polls showing the voters' support for legalization and taxation of the drug, combined with the financial strains of a recession, mean that, quote, this will be a landmark opportunity that will generate interest and funds nationwide, end quote. If successful, Lee said, the initiative will be viewed as a watershed, quote, a first step in changing federal law, end quote. The initiative that Lee's group is preparing to circulate calls for the legalization of small amounts of marijuana for personal possession by adults 21 and older, and allows cities and counties the option of regulating sales and cultivation. The legal amount would be 1 ounce for personal possession, with cultivation allowed in a space no larger than 5 feet by 5 feet. The race is on the West Coast. Oregon activists are currently pushing an act to legalize cultivation, sales, and possession for adults, and if the legislature won't pass it, it will be introduced as an initiative. Just as in 1996 and 1998, when California and Oregon, respectively, legalized the medical use of marijuana, the next decade will see these two states working toward full legalization for all. I just hope they both succeed, and soon. 6 UK cops accused of waterboarding pot suspects. From Sky News. 6 Scotland Yard officers have been suspended over allegations of waterboarding drug suspects. The men are said to have pushed the suspects' heads repeatedly into buckets or bowls of water in a bid to force them to reveal the locations of drugs. The accusation suggests they were simulating the notorious waterboard torture techniques employed against Al-Qaeda suspects by CIA staff. The incidents are said to have taken place at the homes of 4 young men arrested on suspicion of drug offenses at properties in North London in November. From the Times Online, the part of the inquiry focusing on alleged police brutality has been taken over by the Independent Police Complaints Commission. It is examining the conduct of 6 officers connected to drug raids in November, in which 4 men and a woman were arrested at addresses in Enfield and Tottenham. Police said they found a large amount of cannabis and the suspects were charged with importation of cannabis. The case was abandoned 4 months later when the Crown Prosecution Service said it would not have been in the public interest to proceed. It is understood that the trial, by revealing the torture claims, would have compromised the criminal investigation into the 6 officers. They shoot us, arrest us by the hundreds of thousands, imprison us, entrap us, deny us healthcare and access to college, and in the UK, they treat us like terrorists, just to find another kilo. We are the most hunted minority in the world and have to endure every sadistic thing the immoral minority can think of. Despite all that, I can still get an 8th any time, day or night. This is your neighborhood war on pot.
If I were to tell you that in America, right now, over 1 million children sell marijuana, what would you think? Would you think that any public policy that creates over 1 million teenage marijuana dealers needs to be re-examined and possibly amended? You would not be alone. The members of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, aka NORML, have been working since 1970 to reform marijuana laws such that responsible adults, not children, sell and use marijuana. Isn't it high time to reform America's misguided marijuana laws? This is Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of NORML in Washington, D.C. Only concerned citizens can effectively end the federal government's nearly 70-year-old prohibition on responsible adult marijuana sales and use. Want to know more about how you can help? Contact us at NORML, toll-free, 888-67-NORMAL, or by visiting the organization's popular and informative webpage at NORML, NORML.org.
The battle to end adult marijuana prohibition can sometimes seem endlessly frustrating and impossible to overcome. One way we bond as a community and draw strength to continue is by rejuvenating our spirit through art and music. The Marijuana Music Awards exist to recognize those sonic artists in all genres of music who feature a ganja-friendly message to motivate and inspire all the cannabis community. Our Daily Toker Tunes, brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com, feature the finest in blues, rock, jazz, hip-hop, rap, reggae, country, bluegrass, and dance music to enhance that 420 feeling and refresh all you stashers for another day on the front lines of the drug war. Enjoy this cut from MarijuanaMusicAwards.com and visit our blog at stash.normal.org to learn how you can vote for your favorites and enter your toker tunes in the 2009 Marijuana Music Awards. Continuing our bonus 2009 Global Marijuana Music Awards Winners Week, Today we hear 2009 Global MMA Best Blues Song, Toke of Rhythm, by Walter Hurlman and Howlin' Dogma. The band came together in 2001, mixing blues, rock, and roots music from around the U.S. Howlin' Dogma remain the original blues sound, blended with their own unique style. The band say their music is the kind you find in roadhouses and neighborhood bars, the kind you ride your Harley out to see. They make, as they say, music of the people, by the people, and for the people. American music. Check out the band at myspace.com/howlin'dogma. And registered stashers, you can get an MP3 download of this tune, the best blues song from 2009's Global Marijuana Music Awards, Walter Hurlman and Howlin' Dogma with Toke of Rhythm.
We'll be right back. shoes.
Of Americans no longer support arresting and jailing marijuana smokers, and nearly as many support the medical patients having access to medical marijuana. And over 80% of our citizens now believe the war on drugs is an ineffective failure. So the question is, when will the government's misguided war on adult marijuana smokers finally end? When? Simple. When you and your like-minded friends, family, and co-workers get involved with an organization such as the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, also known as NORMA. My name is Keith Strop, and I founded the organization in 1970. Contact us at NORMAL, toll-free, 888-67-NORML, or by visiting the organization's up-to-date webpage at www.normal.org.
Legalization, decriminalization, lowest law enforcement priority, medical marijuana, ganja sacrament, consumer cannabis, industrial hemp. The world of marijuana law reform involves many different aspects of cannabis that intersect nearly every public policy discussion in America, including healthcare, the economy, global climate change, law enforcement and prisons, immigration, religion, free speech, energy policy, and war. Now we take a look at how re-legalizing marijuana will change the world in our NORMAL daily audio stash, Cannabis Conversations. For today's Cannabis Conversations, we bring to you a presentation from the Aspen Legal Seminar that took place this last Friday and Saturday. This one features Oakland attorney Bill Panzer, who's notable for being the co-author of California's Prop 215, as well as a member of the NORMAL Board of Directors. In this presentation, he tells us a whole lot about his experience with dispensary law and trials involving dispensaries and cops that claim to be experts on marijuana. It's both informative and quite funny. I hope you enjoy it. This is attorney Bill Panzer.
Here's what we have. We have in California, you know, we've been struggling with Prop 215 now for 13 years, and we're still struggling with it. And it's basically the cops don't like it. They still don't believe in it. When we were drafting 215, you know, I was the purveyor of doom. I was the pessimist, because I was the one that said, look, guys, the cops, the DAs, the judges, they're going to interpret this as narrowly and as restrictively as they can. And the other people going, oh, no. Once they get this, the scales will fall from their eyes. They'll be like legalizing marijuana. I said, no, they're going to try and find ways to still stamp this out because they don't believe in it. And that's what we've seen going on, and I think that's what you see throughout the country. Well, in February of this year, a report comes through. I think I first got it on the NORMAL list on my email, that Eric Holder, our new attorney general, made some statements during a press conference that the federal government would no longer be going after medical marijuana in medical marijuana states if they were in compliance with state law. And we're starting to deal with the case, and then lo and behold, in February, Eric Holder says, we're not going after people in compliance. And I've got at the time, the district attorney of San Francisco was ready to come forward and saying that to the best of their knowledge, the best of their abilities, Mr. Hayes was in compliance, that the city considered him in compliance. So I write to the U.S. attorney, and I say, hey, you know, there's this new policy, and my guy, you know, was following state law, and I understand that, you know, you guys need to figure this out, and you may not, you know, just take my word for it that my guy was following state law, so why don't we sit down and talk, and I'll give you the evidence. And I get no response. And then comes March. And in March, a spokesperson for the Attorney General's office is asked, hey, that thing that Eric Holder said last month, is that really a change in policy? What's going on? And he said, yes, there is a change in policy. We're only going after those who are hiding behind the shield of medical marijuana. We're not going after those in compliance with state laws. And so I write another letter to the U.S. Attorney in San Francisco, Joseph Frusinello, a Bush appointee, and I say, hey, Here's a copy of the article in the New York Times. This is a change in policy. Can we please talk about this? And I get nothing. What I do get is I get to see an email from the DEA that their response to this is business as usual, don't change anything, other than when you execute a warrant, let headquarters know. So that way they're ready when the press calls. But basically, no change. And what's coming back to me informally through the assistant U.S. attorney that's working on the case is that the U.S. attorney in San Francisco is taking the position there's been no change in policy. At the same time in Los Angeles, the U.S. attorney in L.A. issues a memo to the department saying there's no change in policy, only prosecute and file cases against those who are not in compliance with state law. And then 2 days later, issues another memo saying, forget that memo from 2 days ago. So at the time, there's two cases that are really looking at this. It's a Charles Lynch case in the Central District down in Los Angeles, and my case, Ken Hayes, up in San Francisco. Charles Lynch was running a dispensary in Morro Bay near San Luis Obispo. He had a license from the county, he had a permit. He was working with the local authorities. He got arrested federally. And his judge said, hey, before we sentence this guy, what's this about a new policy? I want to know about the new policy. And the U.S. attorney said, I don't know anything about it. So his judge said, okay, I'm putting this over 30 days, and I want you to go talk to Washington and let me know what's going on about this new policy. At the same time, I have an appearance in San Francisco in front of Judge Breyer, and I say, Judge, I think that the court may need to do an inquiry, as I think that the U.S. attorney in this district may have a conflict of interest in this case, in that he may have an agenda that's different from that of his client. And the judge looks at me and goes, his client? Who's his client? I said, Your Honor, the United States of America, which by its attorney general says that it doesn't want to go after those who are in compliance with state medical marijuana laws, and this U.S. attorney isn't following that, so he must have his own agenda, and it seems to me there may be a conflict of interest there that the court should inquire. The judge looks at me and says, Mr. Panzer, I'm not going to get between the U.S. attorney and the attorney general. But if you want to try, be my guest. So I said, well, Judge, can I have 30 days to try and contact Eric Holder? He said, sure. Gave me a 30-day continuance, found that, you know, excluded it from speedy trial time, and I write Eric Holder a letter. CC'd our two senators and my congressperson. Well, I don't know what point it was CC'ing, you know, Dianne Feinstein. She'd probably say they should get even more for medical, you know, but anyway, didn't hear anything back from Eric Holder. I mean, you know, I sent it by FedEx because I figured that might stand out from the regular letters. Plus, I think still in Washington, letters take 2 weeks to get there because they still have to look for anthrax. So I sent FedEx. Don't hear a thing. But a couple of days before we're supposed to go back to court, I get a phone call from Joe Russinello, the U.S. attorney in San Francisco. And he tells me that Eric Holder never said they're not going after those who are in compliance with state law. That what Eric Holder actually said was, we're only going after those who are hiding behind the shield of medical marijuana. And it was hard for me to pin him down any more than that statement, but from our conversation, what I got the gist of is what his position was, is since there's no such thing as medical marijuana, everyone who says it's medical marijuana is therefore hiding behind the shield. The result is what we have in California, at least, is business as usual. Everybody's talking about the federal government's policy has changed. They've changed their policy. There's a new policy. Yeah, the new policy is we're saying that there's a new policy. There really isn't one. We're not doing anything differently, but we're saying that we're doing it differently. There's a marvelous South Park about this, about how this country was founded, that the beauty, the genius of our government is that we're able to say we're against war and go to war at the same time. And that's really what's going on here. Now, things could change, and I hope that they will. I think part of this is because we've still got the Bush U.S. attorney in power. We've still got the Bush DEA guys in power. And as I tell my clients, you know, when they go, but Obama's in now, shouldn't everything change? And I say, you know, there's a case called Brown versus Board of Education. Back in 1954, the United States Supreme Court ruled that discrimination was unconstitutional. It was against the law to have separate but equal facilities. So of course, in 1955, if you were black, you could go down to Mississippi and kiss a white girl and walk around, and nobody would bother you because the law changed that, right? Of course not. Here we are, we're over 50 years later, and we're still fighting racial discrimination in this country. It takes a long time to change people's hearts and minds. We've got cops, DAs, and prosecutors that still think this is BS. The California Narcotics Officers Association, it's a group, it's a private organization, all of the narcs belong to it, most of the other cops belong to it. They do most of the trainings. When you get an off, when I get a cop on the stand and I'm voir diring him on his expertise, invariably, most of his cannabis training is coming from their seminars. They have four seminars, kind of like ours, except it's alcohol. And I mean, I have a friend who was a DA who went to a couple of these, and he said he'd get together with the cops, and in the back seat, everybody would bring their big stash of alcohol. I'd bring the gin, you bring the scotch, and just copious amounts of alcohol. Otherwise, very similar to what we do.
Yeah.
So not as healthy, you know. And they're probably sitting in on every single talk as much as we're sitting on every single talk. Well, they have a website. And on their website, there's a click for position papers. Now, I checked it actually just before I came out here, and it's being redesigned, so I couldn't get it. But on their website, if you click on position papers, unless they change it, their position on medical marijuana. Now, again, this is the organization that trains the cops. Medical marijuana is a joke. There's tens of thousands of studies that show that it's BS, that it's bad for you. It's really being, all these medical marijuana laws, they're being passed, it's being funded by rich people back east that want to legalize drugs. And people like Tony Serra, who says that if you shoot a cop, he'll pay you to take his case. And it talks about Keith saying that it's really a red herring 20 years ago somewhere. I mean, it's reefer madness. And this is the group that trains the cops. These cops don't believe this stuff. The federal government has a cannabis farm in Oxford, Mississippi. It's the University of Mississippi, run by Dr. Mahmoud El Soleil. That's where they grow the cannabis that's used for whatever federal experiments are allowed. But they did yield studies in 1985, 1986, 90, and 91 at the University of Mississippi, published in 1992. You've all got it in your materials. And the lawyers, this is a marvelous, marvelous piece of information for you to have when you're cross-examining these cops on yields. Because this is the DEA's numbers. And what it shows is that cannabis will yield approximately 1/2 ounce of dried manicured bud per square foot of canopy space. Now, some people get a little more, some people get a little less. But if somebody tells you, I'm getting 30 pounds out of my 4x8 tray, they're full of crap. Okay? A 4x8 tray, assuming no overhang, usually there is overhang, but if there were no overhang, it's 32 square feet, 32 half ounces, 16 ounces, 1 pound. You put 10 plants in your 4x8 tray, I put 100 plants in my 4x8 tray, and we get the same amount. So let's stop buying into this plant number crap. But it doesn't matter size. I've had a cop testify that 2-inch tall clones put out a pound of bud a month each. I mean, these guys, for the lawyers, you can't accept that these guys are experts, because they're not. You know, when they, typical cop, they'll be on the stand, and they'll say, yes, I had, at that conference, we had an 8-hour drug class. All right, now, officer, that covered not just marijuana, that covered heroin and cocaine and speed and all kinds of stuff. Yes, it did. Well, that 8 hours, how much of that was devoted to marijuana? Or maybe about 2 hours. Okay, now that included sales of marijuana, cultivation of marijuana, possession of marijuana, being under the influence of marijuana, things like that, right? Now, how much of it was actually devoted to cultivation of marijuana? Well, maybe of the 2 hours, maybe about 20 minutes or half an hour. That covered both indoor and outdoor cultivation? Well, yeah. So how much of that was indoor cultivation? Now we got him down to, instead of an 8-hour class in drugs, he heard about cultivation for indoor cultivation for 15 minutes. right? And then you start asking me about this stuff. I had a cop not too long ago on the stand. You know, the issue was when the plants are mature, because in California you can have 12 immature or 6 mature. And this cop's saying that they're mature when you can first sex them. As soon as you can tell the boys from the girls, that's when he considers them mature. I said, okay, officer, how do you tell the boy girl from the girls? How do you tell the boy pot plants from the girl pot plants? And he says, well, the male plants have little balls. I said, really, officer? Hey, there's a pad here. Could you please draw us a picture of a male pot plant? Show me what it looks like. He draws a leaf with testicles. Just worry about it. You know, just the fact that they say an expert doesn't make them an expert. So now, any medical marijuana case I've got, you know, I'm asking in advance. I want the training that this cop went through. You will believe the stuff you get. The recent case I had, I got the PowerPoint. The DA put on a medical marijuana training for the cops, and I got the PowerPoint presentation. And what was funny about the PowerPoint presentation is almost in each one, in each frame of it, there'd be like a little like laughing pot leaf. Or one of them had two little kids about 2 or 3 years old, one passing a joint to another. You know, and another one had what looked like a McDonald's sign that said, you know, over 1 billion stoned. And as we went through each one, I said, now officer, over here, where it says over 1 billion stoned, could you explain to me what you were taught that had to do with medical marijuana? Well, I don't remember anything, it was just on there. All right, now how about in this next slide, where the picture was here, with these two that looked like children smoking a joint. What were you taught that had to do with medical marijuana? Well, I don't know that that's a joint. All right, officer, you believe that they're two little kids, right? Yeah. And it looks like they're smoking a joint-like object. Well, I don't know if they're smoking it. All right, officer. You agree they're holding what appears to be a joint-like object, right? Well, yeah. What were you taught about? What would that have to do with medical marijuana? And what it showed was they take this as a joke. Now, what I think is going to happen is this. Now, who knows the future, but this is my best take on it. I do think that the federal government, the Obama administration, is going to back off to some extent, not a great extent. What we've seen in California is they go after the biggest and the baddest. They go after the ones that are making lots of money. They love that publicity. They love putting out that press release about how the guy they busted that owned the dispensary was driving a new Hummer, had a new Harley at home, had $600,000 cash in his basement. They love that stuff, so they go after those. They go after ones where there's complaints. A couple that they went after a few years back in L.A. One of them was advertising on the radio. Another one was putting out flyers under the windshields of cars parked next to a high school. You know, the ones where the neighbors are all complaining because the people are all like, you know, driving up with the thumping bass in the cars and the giant speakers and double parking and running in and running out and people are peeing in the bushes and pissing off the neighbors. You know. These are the people that they were going after. So, if you want to stay off federal radar, you know, don't do stupid things like that. But I do think that you're going to find the feds backing off a little bit. But what I'm seeing happening in California, I mean, California is an amazing social phenomenon. I think conservatively, 95% of the medical cannabis dispensaries in California are not legal under state law. Probably more than 95% are not legal under state law. Because in California, there were two models under which one human being can legally hand cannabis to another human being. I mean, a patient can get anywhere. A patient can go to a drug dealer, buy from a drug dealer. Patient's completely legal. The drug dealer has, in violation of 11360, the Health and Safety Code, can go to jail for 4 years. So to protect the supplier, under 215, from the caregiver to the patient. That's it. Under 215, that's the only one that can legally supply it is the caregiver to the patient. Up until last November, it was thought that if you consistently provide the cannabis, you qualify as caregiver. Numerous dispensaries were formed under that model. Last November, our state Supreme Court ruled that to qualify as caregiver, you have to qualify absent any marijuana at all. You have to consistently assume responsibility for the patient's health, housing, or safety, non-cannabis related. then you can be a carrier. That pulled it out, pulled the rug out from under most of the dispensaries. The other way in California one human being can hand cannabis to another is from one member of a patient collective or cooperative to another member of a collective or cooperative. So what's going on in California is almost all these dispensaries are owned by one guy or one woman or a couple of people. They open up shop. Anyone that walks in and flashes a recommendation will sell you pot, take a profit, walk home with it. They're calling it a collective. But just because they call it a collective doesn't make it a collective. You can take a cheeseburger and call it a slice of pizza, but it's not a slice of pizza. And if it's one guy that owns it, sells it, makes money, that's not legal under state law. I get calls all the time from people that want to come in for a consult. And I tell them up front, I say, I'm going to tell you right now, most of the people who talk to me change their minds. If you really want to make money, the time, the effort and the time you're going to put into this, go sell yogurt. You'll make a lot more money. There's no way that growers can legally sell to dispensaries. It doesn't work. And what I'm seeing a lot is collectives where they're saying, well, I'm a member of the collective, and I'm growing and selling to the collective. No, that doesn't work. If it's a collective, that's not your marijuana you're growing. That's the collective's cannabis. It's owned by the collective. You're an employee. They're paying you a salary to tend the plants for them. You're getting your money back that you're putting out. You're getting your $20 an hour, $25 an hour, or whatever it is. The money that you get is based on that, regardless of what your yield is. Because that's not your cannabis. It belongs to everybody. This whole idea of nonprofit, it's really a red herring. Because a true collective, by definition, there can't be a profit. It's a bunch of people getting together and pooling their resources for their own use and redistributing it amongst themselves. There's no outside money going in. You know, and I have people I talk to all the time where, and Matt talked about this, they say, look, we're a collective, and I'm paying myself a salary of, you know, $250,000 a year. And like Matt said, that, you know, that guy on the jury who's, you know, is 45 years old, busting his ass working overtime to pull $85,000 and keep the kid in college and pay off the mortgage, and my client is 24 years old, making $250,000 a year selling cannabis, and their qualifications are they followed fish around and smoked a lot of pot in the parking lots, man. It's not going to fly. You know, I mean, yes, you can point to other industries and say, look at the guy who's running that collective. He's making a lot of money. Yeah, but that guy, you know, has an MBA in business from Harvard or something, and he worked in other corporations, and he has qualifications. I strongly recommend all you people that are involved in dispensaries, whether they're legal or not under state law, go to your community college, take some business classes, take some accounting classes. Do something so that if you have to down the road show that I'm not a drug dealer, I'm trying to do this the best I can, and I have qualifications. Look, I've taken these classes, I've made this effort, because what I'm trying to do is bring some relief to some patients. That's what it's really all about, and I can't do it if I can't make a living doing it, because then I'm going to starve to death. I'm making my modest living doing this, and I'm helping out patients. And I'm doing my best. We're providing other patient services. I've taken classes. I'm learning about accounting. We're doing taxes, the whole bit. You know, because it's going to get tight. As the local people figure out that dispensaries aren't legal or what the tight rules are dispensaries have to follow, they're going to start holding your feet to the fire. So be prepared for that and talk to a good criminal lawyer and a business lawyer and set yourselves up so that when they do come and hold your feet to the fire, you're in compliance. Right now we're going to take questions.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org. And you can interact and download from our audio stash blog at stash.normal.org. for everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with the reminder to call President Obama and tell him he needs to either commute the sentence or full pardon Charles Lynch. The phone number is 202-456-1111. Certainly, with all the people in the past who've ever been pardoned or had their sentence commuted, Charles Lynch would be one of the people who deserves it the most. It's the right thing to do, President Obama, and if you were serious about not prosecuting people and interfering in state laws regarding medical marijuana, then this would be a way you could prove it. We're counting on you. Be the change we deserve. Thanks for tuning into the podcast. We'll be back tomorrow with more news and interviews you can use for the cannabis community. Don't forget to follow us at twitter.com/NATLNormal or Radical Russ. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.